I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 203 for the weekend starting 12 January 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, 5G is coming.
Also this week, the best and worst performing tech shares on the JSE, the chip security debacle, and HTC has a new Vive.
It's a brand new year and lots to talk about. Let's do it.
Welcome to the show and Happy New Year, Rehot.
How's it and Happy New Year to you? How's it?
Thank you. How was your December?
Yeah, it was quiet. Lots of games, lots of vibing.
You stayed in Joburg, hey?
Yeah, I was staying up here, yeah. So lots of beer.
Lots of beer, lots of tinkering.
Lots of beer and gaming, yeah. It was actually good.
Sounds like the perfect Christmas.
Yeah, it was. That HTC Vive really makes you feel like you're in many places. It was spectacular to have access to it for a while.
What were you using on it?
All of it. Google Earth, Sirius, okay. Sam, Labs.
Google Earth must look amazing.
Google Earth is fantastic, but I'll talk a bit about it now.
A bit later,
I can talk about it for hours. But yeah, it was fantastic to really, you know, spending time with technology in your own domain really makes you feel like I get you lots more hands-on time with it, and you can kind of explore and tinker. And
yeah,
I'm excited for the technology, and I'm keen to buy one, which is a problem.
Yeah, they're not cheap at all.
They're not. If you have a gaming PC, it's a nice add-on. It's a $15,000 add-on, you know? It's not bad, but if you don't have a gaming PC, you're going to flesh out a lot of money.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. We're going to talk about that in some more detail later in the show. I spent 2 weeks down on the garden route, which was most enjoyable.
That's also one of the best Christmases to have.
Yeah. Very pleasant. George. Spent most of the time in George, which is actually a beautiful little town. It's not a town you really think of, George. When people think of the coast, they think Plett, they think Knysna, they think those sort of places. But, George, it's a little bit in from the sea, but they've got a beautiful beach, or several beautiful beaches.
Several
in the
beautiful
area.
Beaches.
There's Heralds Bay, which is really stunning, although a bit busy in December.
Victoria Bay.
There's Wilderness, which is really nice as well.
Spent many summers as a kid there. I've got family down there.
Okay.
I'm lucky to say that I know it well.
Okay. We were lucky with the weather. It was cold and wet when we arrived, but it quickly warmed up, and it was beautiful. So it was nice. It was the longest holiday I've had in probably 10 years. So really enjoyed it. Relaxed, and the place we were staying had 100 meg fiber. So
what more do you want?
Fiber
by the beach.
Exactly.
You take your drone with you? A drone with you?
No, beautiful. I don't have a drone, unfortunately.
No, I was just teasing you with that one. I know you don't have a drone, but that's the place where you want to fly a drone, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's beautiful there. And with the Otaniqua Mountains on one side, George nestled below, and then the sea on the
just
other
just stay
side.
Away from the airport section, you'll be fine. 10 k's from the airport, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, actually, we were staying about 3 or 4 k's from the airport.
Yeah, it's very small. Yeah, it's very small.
It is a small town, but beautiful. So clean and well kept, and you can see there's money in that town as well. Beautiful part of the world.
An amazing amount of people fly down weekly.
You know,
coming up here for work and going down there for a weekend. It's worth it, I think.
If you can afford it. So, before we get into our news, let's do our quiz. Do you want to ask the first question?
Sure. The first question of 2018, and this is a big one, guys. I'm just kidding. Showmax CEO John Kostaftis has joined which international television group?
Naspers is said to be leading an investment of 2.5 billion rand in which Indian food delivery company?
WikiLeaks' Julian Assange has been made a citizen of which country?
Microsoft has launched PowerShell, its scripting and automation tool, on which two operating systems other than Windows?
And the final question, Intel said last week that all modern processors can be attacked, exposing crucial data. What are the techniques called? And those were pretty big ones.
Yeah, because the biggest tech story over the Christmas period, and we'll be talking about that in the show today.
Probably of the decade.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, since chips were manufactured, right?
Yeah, certainly since the Pentium floor back in the mid to late 90s. Remember
that?
All the jokes about the chip being unable to add numbers. I forget what it was a name for that floor. I forget what it was, but it's a biggie. It's certainly a biggie, and it affects especially cloud providers. But we'll talk about that a bit later in the show, because first we're going to talk about something very exciting that happened at MTN last week. First day back at the office, the 8th of January, Monday. Earlier this week, in fact. MTN ran the first public trial of, demonstrated at least, or took the wraps off, I should say, the first 5G trial by a mobile operator in South Africa. And the results were super impressive, I have to tell you.
I saw the screenshot. You were bragging about it.
Damn, when did we get this?
It was very, very, very impressive. Now, this is very early days for 5G. Mm. The terminals they were using were massive. I mean, we're talking large crate-sized containers that eventually will be shrunk down into smartphone size.
Sure.
But what they were able to demonstrate, and it was the same when 4G launched and 3G launched. Yeah, they started with these sort of big test units. But what they were able to demonstrate was consistent throughput of over 20 gigabits a second. Now, to put that in perspective, the fastest commercially available fiber to the home connection in South Africa is 1 gigabit per second. So we're talking 20 times faster over a mobile connection.
Also talking a 20 times bigger phone bill, data bill, right?
Yeah, data prices are obviously going to come down here. But amazing what. And of course, in real world, we're not going to see those sort of speeds. I mean, this is in an ideal test environment. We'll get there eventually in the wild, but for now we're not.
I mean, what would that? What do you reckon that would equate to in the real world? I mean, what would the downfall be? 400 megabits per second?
I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. I'd be surprised if there isn't gigabit connectivity in the wild.
It'll have to rival fiber at least. I think the technology and throughput will be on par with that, which means it will have gigabit speeds.
Exactly. But we're a long way from seeing this for various reasons. The first is that it's very expensive to deploy, and it's going to be limited, I think, to certain urban settings to start. I think in the
form of states, certain estates,
certain
estates, housing estates, suburbs.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to use very high frequencies, which at least initially, which means it's not going to penetrate far. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll find the airport and coffee shops, the usual places where they put Wi-Fi, is the first place you're going to see.
And lots of people, because
exactly. That'll help with that. Exactly. But you're not going to see a big tower going up in the middle of your suburb to deliver 5G services, or towers being retrofitted for 5G services. I don't think, at least, not yet. Not until 5G gets deployed on lower frequency bands. And that's going to take a lot longer, and we've got a particular set of challenges in South Africa, as we both know, with the fact that the mobile operators haven't actually been licensed with 4G spectrum yet. They've been refarming 2G and 3G for 4G. Mm. So they haven't actually got the 4G spectrum yet. Now we're talking about 5G spectrum. So ICASA provided a temporary license to MTN to do this trial. I think it lasts for 8 months, I think they said. And they're using, wait for it, 800 megahertz of spectrum in the, I think it's the 15 gigahertz band. So basically they're using the whole 15 gigahertz band to do this trial. Now Vodacom is also, had also announced last year that they'd be running a 5G trial. MTN was the first to take the wraps off their trial. Presumably Vodacom's going to provide some details about their trial as well soon. MTN is doing its trial with Ericsson. And Vodacom is trialing with Nokia. So I expect that Vodacom will have a media conference or something in the not-too-distant future where they're going to announce this, and no doubt where they'll attempt to produce speeds in excess of 20 gigabits a second.
Get the fastest.
Obviously, you've got to try and outdo the competition.
He wants a bigger quote. But what about the handsets? I mean, what handsets do they use to test on this for 5G? No consumer handsets.
There are no handsets yet.
So they were actually using terminals.
They were using terminals.
I see what you're saying.
Exactly. The first ZTE, in fact, announced in the US this morning, or it would have been last night their time, that they're going to be bringing the first 5G handset to market and possibly a modem, Wi-Fi type modem as well, by early next year. So I think we're looking at 5G handsets starting to proliferate into the market in 2019.
The desktop modem, that's a good point. I never even thought of that. I mean, with 5G capabilities, having that route in your house with that capability makes a lot more sense than having it in your handset, which, let's be honest, with fiber these days, 4G isn't as much of we don't need as much speed on our devices. What we need just access to good data all the time, consistently.
And
when we get home, we want...
And I think that's one of the problems the mobile operators have, is figuring out what the application is for 5G.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you say, especially if you're only using mobile data on your smartphone, then 4G and even 3G for that matter, and I'm a Telkom mobile customer, and I was roaming on MTN 3G when I was on holiday, and it's perfectly fine for on a smartphone.
You social media updates, posting,
even watching YouTube videos. Yeah. I was watching YouTube videos on 3G. It was absolutely fine.
The screen is only so small, right? So it's not going to, you know,
yeah,
draw down those big files. Which is fine.
So figuring out what the application for 5G is, and they had some ideas. There was this demo they were doing where you put on an HTC Vive headset and we're down in a mine and it would give you real time information. They had a demo of a sports game where they could feed real time information about what's happening on the field. Because of the low latency of 5G and the high speed, they could provide information to a television studio, for example, with real information. They can convert a player into a graphic, for example, in real time and do cool, interesting stuff like that. Because the latency, first of all, is amazing. It's fiber-like latency. We're talking less than 5 megabits per second and as low as 5 milliseconds
yeah.
and as low as 1 millisecond, which is fiber equivalence. And we're talking 20 gigabit per second connection. So this... You know, the applications still need to be found for this stuff. No doubt once the connections are out there, people will find ways to use it.
Exactly. But for me, the more I think about it, it's not really about the application, I think. It's if we have this technology rolled out like we have normal cellular networks. Mm. So let's say 10 years down the line, we have 5G everywhere. That'll mean, obviously, fiber's got a lot more competition, but it would mean more people have access to just much better quality infrastructure or connectivity, no matter where they are.
Mm.
So verticals like sports, agriculture, if a farmer wants to control his drones or his tractor, you know, he doesn't have to set up point-to-point links. You know, he can use the cellular network, for lack of a better term, because it's all connected at high speed, low latency, which means I can connect to anybody in the world at a low latency from my mobile device.
Mm.
Anywhere in the world, even if I'm in the desert or on the beach.
Yeah.
I think that futuristic vision of what this world is going to be when everything's connected.
And
technology like
live streaming becomes... I mean, you put a camera on a drone and you live stream over the 5G network or you...
Exactly.
You another application that I can think of would be in autonomous vehicles that need to be connected all the time. You could have a heads-up display on your screen, some sort of augmented reality type display. As you're driving down the highway, it'll tell you next off-ramp your buddy's having a beer at the keg. Or it'll show the shop on your right has a, you know, 50% discount on jeans or whatever. That sort of augmented reality type application which 5G might enable. I mean, you could probably do it with 4G as well, but...
But you have access to the type of connectivity today you can only get if you're connected to a line.
Yeah.
I mean, even 4G has got its limitations with these high data. I mean, you can stream a 4K video fine on 4G, but 5 is down the line, we've got 8K, maybe 16K. Data packets are going to be much bigger.
Mm.
You know, a 100 meg line won't cut it anymore, you know. Mm. So, and I think it's future-proofing yourself or, you know, ourselves against that kind of thing, too.
Yeah.
It's not just about getting faster speeds because we're going to have a gigabit connection. We're going to need a gigabit connection because data packets are going to be, or the data we transfer is going to be so much bigger.
Mm. Of course, the other thing about 5G is how important fiber is going to become in delivering it.
The backhaul
is going to be so crucial. And that's where I think guys like Vumatel and OpenServe and others are in a very strong position because they've deployed all this fiber all over suburbs. It's not that difficult to just run a fiber spur up a telephone pole because it's going to have to be a very dense network, especially if we're going to be deploying it at ultra-high frequencies, like 15 gigahertz or even higher. Because the signal doesn't propagate very far and it doesn't penetrate buildings very well, so you're going to have a very dense network.
Many towers or a backbone that can handle the traffic.
Well, you're going to have many base stations, but not the base stations you understand today with a big tower sitting in the middle of the suburb that's 20 meters high. The base station is going to be a tiny little device that's going to sit inside a street lamp.
Oh, okay.
And they're going to be one street might have hundreds of these things. But they all have to be connected somehow, and you're not going to put microwave backhaul on every lamppost. So you're going to need fiber, and the fiber to the home guys have wired up the city. They've got, if you look at their maps, they've got every street has just got fiber running up it. So surely here is a huge business opportunity for these guys to work with the mobile operators, or possibly do it themselves.
Please don't dig up, don't trench any more, guys. Just use what is there.
But it must be a big opportunity for them
to
5G rolls out. And it'll only be in probably wealthier, denser urban areas where it happens at least for the first year or two.
Yeah.
especially if it's only on high frequencies. But yeah, I think Vumatel and companies like that are sitting on a potential gold mine.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to be recording a podcast with Giovanni Chiarelli. He is the Group Chief Technology and Information Officer at MTN South Africa next week, where we're going to unpack the 5G trial in a great deal of detail and talk about, you know, answer some of the questions about, you know, how long it's going to be until we actually see these services, when are the handsets coming, what will the handsets look like, and just generally what we can expect from this technology. So I'm expecting that's going to be a very interesting discussion.
Looking forward to that.
So I Tech Central does a survey, not a survey, a piece of research every year looking at the best performing shares of the year. And of course this year is no different, and we've looked back at 2017 to have a look at which companies did the best and which fared the worst. The list of JSE Tech companies has shrunk, unfortunately. There have been some delistings over the years. Always interesting to crunch the numbers and go through them in some detail and put them in a spreadsheet and start to look at, you know, who's really done well and who hasn't. Because you know, you're looking at the stock market, but you know, can't always follow, you know, how everyone's doing. You get an idea of how companies are performing and that sort of thing. Yeah. But it's always interesting to actually put them in a spreadsheet and have a look at.
But you do need the numbers. You need the solid numbers.
Of course you do.
With these kind of things.
Yeah.
So you need this.
Of course. So I pulled this all together a couple of days ago, and it was really interesting to see who's performed really well this year and who's performed atrociously. And the top two performing companies, and I included them in the tech category because they use technology, are both vehicle tracking and fleet management companies. They by far outperformed all the other players. Mixed Telematics was number one, but their share price rising by 89% in 2017,
wow,
which is an admirable performance given the weak state of the economy. And CarTrack Holdings, its direct competitor, rising by 81%. I don't know these companies very well, but certainly they're obviously doing something right.
Mm.
And this isn't a once-off performance. These companies have been performing well over a longer period as well. And also perhaps a bit surprising to see a number three, a company of this size, is Naspers. Share price rising by 72% in 2017, and this was off already a very high base. Market cap sitting around the 1.5 trillion rand level. And mostly driven by its investment, of course, in Tencent, the big Chinese internet company that in which it owns a 33% stake. And Tencent had a huge, huge year.
Ridiculous.
Its market valuation exceeded that of Facebook for the first time. And that company just continues to invest and invest and invest. And I was actually speaking to some guys, some Chinese guys from Huawei, just before Christmas. And I was talking to them about Tencent, and I said, well, what do you think of this thing? You know, you guys are from China. Is this valuation on this thing justified? So they opened up their phones, and they showed me this Tencent service, Tencent service, Tencent service. Oh, we do this. Everything's in WeChat or whichever app it was. WeChat is huge. And they do everything in WeChat. And they said everyone in China uses it. And they were said, you know, this thing is massive. So I was convinced, okay, there's real value here. Real value here.
Wow.
Whether Naspers is going to go up another 70% odd this year, I don't know. I mean, it's really hugely valued now. It's still trading at a huge discount, of course, to the value of its stake in Tencent, which is a bit bizarre. But I suppose investors want direct exposure. Naspers sitting on some other assets, which I'm sure are quite valuable, including MultiChoice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making internet investments around the world in e-commerce businesses, online classified businesses, and increasingly in food delivery services. So who knows? You know, they're sitting on a very rich valuation. I think their trailing price-to-earnings multiple is sitting around 35, which is quite high. But then again, Tencent is I think, growing at a faster clip than that. So maybe these valuations are justified, and maybe they can continue growing this year. I'm not sure I'm brave enough to buy the share.
I was just going to say, is this time for us to buy? Or should we stick with Bitcoin that we don't understand either? I mean,
yes. So the rounding out the top five were Ultron in fourth place with a 37.7% improvement. I think it's a continuation of the good performance in 2016 as they turn the business around now, led by Mteto Nyati, the former MTN South Africa CEO. I think the performance of that company is going to be closely watched this year. If they get the turnaround right, there's still a lot of upside potential there. And a huge group, which is a small niche telecommunication service provider. They recently appointed, I think it was about a year ago now, appointed Duarte da Silva, who's a former top-rated equities analyst and also a former banker, as their chairman. And they've refocused that business, and they're doing very well. So a huge group, up 22% in 2017. But over 3 years, they were the best performer, up 317%. So that's a huge group. And looking more down towards the bottom end of the list, where you'll see all the red lines, all the red coloration, the worst performer this year was Adapt IT, software services company. I think a bit unexpected, really. Adapt IT has been a market darling for many years, and their share price ran up all the way to the end of 2016. And then they put out some results. I think it was around Feb, March of last year, where they said their organic growth had slowed, and the market took a bit of fright to that. And the share price was sold down aggressively, falling 60% in 2017. Mm. Now, I note the share price has started rallying strongly in the last few days. I think it's up about 20 or 25% since the beginning of the year. And a lot of analysts are pegging Adapt IT to be a big winner this year. Suggestions it's been sold off too hard. And the results are coming out, I think. The year end is December, so we should see results around mid-February, maybe a little bit later than that. But it'll be very interesting to see what those numbers look like. But if there's signs of that organic growth number going up, then Adapt IT could... be the best performer this year, who knows? And EOH, which is also an IT services company, had a dreadful 2017. Yeah. Some of it of its own creation. We've spoke about it in some detail, I think, in our second last podcast of last year, so I'm not going to rehash all of that, but some of the directors, they're forced to sell shares in early December. They were in flooding the market with sales because they were caught short in share purchase agreements, and the share price tanked as a result because the market was just flooded with sell orders, and it fell all the way to 26.99 rand, I think it was. Bounced up again once those sell orders were out of the market, but it's still down 58% on the year. And also for a former high-flying IT share, it's over 3 years down 38%. It's not a good show, but I suppose brave investors will jump in now and make a fortune.
I've got a question. Can anybody actually tell me what EOH does? it's the same with any of these corporates that do consulting services.
Yeah.
What do they do?
IT services. Nebulous
IT
term.
IT services. Yeah.
I certainly see EOH offices all over the place. Wherever you go.
Yeah, there's lots of them. Yeah.
Well, just here in Joburg, you go to Randburg, you go to Midrand, you go to Bedford View, which is their head office. But all over the place, Sandton, they've got buildings that say EOH on them. They've bought a lot of companies over the years, and some analysts criticize them for that and say that they've been using their expensive paper to buy these companies. It's all going to unravel at some point. I think the answer is they do a lot across the board, broad IT services, from networking to consulting to you name it, software, ERP. They're a broad base.
It's always been one of these companies that you can't pinpoint. You kind of know what they do, but
you also don't. These broad based IT services companies are all kind of the same, though, aren't they? I mean, Business Connection.
True.
They've got a wide variety of services and products that they offer. And pinpointing them down to one specific thing is very difficult. Dimension Data is probably a bit easier because they tend to focus on the networking side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know what the future holds for these broad-based IT services companies. Whether they make sense. Certainly, they've done well in South Africa historically. They've been the biggest companies. Whether it was Persatel, which merged into QData to form what eventually became Business Connection. Dimension Data, which is also quite broad-based and probably not as broadly focused as some of those players. They've certainly historically been the biggest listed companies on the stock market.
Because they've got the biggest clients.
They've got big corporate clients.
Yeah.
Who pay them a lot of annuity revenue.
Exactly.
Every year.
They're playing a level that many other businesses like us can't compete in.
So Adapt IT and EOH may be good performers this year. I guess it's all down to those results, though. We'll have to see what they look like. And then among the telco stocks, MTN was the best performer, but I think that's more coming off the very bad 2015-2016 that MTN had after the Nigerian fine and management shakeup. And I think Rob Shooter, the new group CEO, is turning things around there. I certainly get that impression. I see a renewed vigor in the organization, talking to the executives there. There's a new desire to compete. Just the fact that MTN came to market first in unveiling a 5G trial says a lot to me, because Vodacom's stated strategy is to be first in technology and to deliver the best network. Now here's MTN sneaking in the back door and saying, hey guys, we've got the first 5G trial. You talk to them and they say, well, actually, our network is getting better. We're aggressively competing. We're going to make sure we've got the better network than Vodacom. So there's a head-to-head battle going on here, and I think that there's certainly a renewed vigor, I think it's the best word, amongst MTN employees. I'm certainly picking that up from my interactions with the executive management team. There's a renewed desire to compete, and that has to be good for customers. Not sure it's good for MTN's competitors. Maybe it is. So MTN up 8% this year. Still very low, the share price, compared to where it's been. I think it peaked at around 250 or 260 rand a share, sitting around the 130, 135 rand level at the moment. So potentially, if they get the turnaround right, a lot of potential upside there. Vodacom, down 4.5% this year. A rare down year for Vodacom. They've had a pretty steady upward march in terms of their share price since they listed. I think it was back in 2008 or 2009. So I think Vodacom feeling the pressure there. I think in large part because of the state of the economy, and they're the biggest player in this market, and you know the pressure from that economy and competitors also cutting prices. I think they are feeling some pressure. But still up 13% over 3 years. And then Telkom had a bit of a shocker this year, down 35%. on poorer than expected numbers. I think that all eyes will be on Sipho Maseko, the CEO, this year to see if he can turn that around, because he has been doing a fantastic job there, but some of their divisions not doing that great. BCX didn't have a very good year at all, and I clearly got the impression that Sipho was not happy with the performance of BCX at the results presentation. So we shall see in the next set of numbers, which I think is the full year to March, which will be out around May timeframe. So, yeah, interesting movements on the market this year. If you invested in the worst performer, you would have lost 60% of your money. If you invested in the best performer in the tech sector, you would have made an 89% return.
And if you invested in Bitcoin, you would have won.
You would have won the whole world.
You would have
world.
Won the game, yeah.
Yeah, let's not talk about that, because I'm not an investor.
Neither am I. I'm bitter.
Although it's come down quite a bit, I see, since when we were talking about it in December, when it was near 20,000 rand a share. $20,000. Now sitting around 13.5. Maybe that signals a buying opportunity, Rehat.
Still a little bit out of my league there, Duncan. Maybe I'll buy fractions of the coin.
You can buy fractions, yeah, you can. You can indeed.
It's not as cool as saying I own one Bitcoin. Yeah. And it's also not as easy to calculate, because if I've got 0.0000018, I have to calculate how much is mine worth every time the price. No.
What are those fractions called? I think they're called Satoshis or something. I think they're called Satoshis.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never heard that there was a name for it.
Yeah, there is. And it divides, I think it goes down to 8 decimal places. 0.008 times 1. But you know, I'm not sure I have the cojones to buy Bitcoin. Maybe I should just put a bit in.
Just a little one.
Yeah. But I think this might be the year of the altcoins. Bitcoin had such a great year in 2017, almost at the expense of some of the altcoins. So I don't know. A lot of guys are punting Ripple. A lot of guys are punting Monero. Guys are punting Ethereum. So I don't know.
Is Doge still a thing? Doge coin.
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. I know a lot of guys were buying Ripple in December, and then it tanked 50%.
Because that's when you buy it.
maybe, but it could tank another 50%, and then another 50%.
Just keep buying, just keep buying. Right?
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, but that's our wrap of the best performing tech shares of 2017. We'll review that again in a year's time. I think we need to take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So the big story, the international tech story, while we were, while you were playing with your Vive and drinking beer, and while I was
by the coast,
while I was what was I
drinking
doing?
Beer,
running around on boats in the Nizhny Lagoon.
Oh wow!
And also drinking beer. There was a big story that broke, and that's around the chip security, the Meltdown and Spectre vulnerabilities in chips. Now, I've tried to understand this story, and it's hugely technically complex. I've listened to Security Now with, what's his name, Steve Gibson, on the Twit network, and he gives the best explanation I've heard of it so far. And if you really want to dig down at that, I highly recommend listening to Steve Gibson's Security Now podcast. But basically, and I apologize to anyone more technical than me if I mangle this, but and I'm going to give a very simple explanation of this. But my understanding of it is that processors did something called speculative execution. Exactly. Which someone suggests is the name for capital punishment in Iran. I think I heard that on Twitter, actually. But they do speculative execution, and there is a way, potentially, it hasn't actually been done, apparently, and there's no one's actually apparently been using this. Well, I don't think anyone would really
know. Using an exploit,
yeah. Not that anyone would know. I'm sure the NSA knows about it or has known about it for a while. But
if somebody knows, somebody else knew before then, probably.
Almost certainly. But basically, this speculative execution may have or can make passwords and other sensitive information, banking details, etc., available to someone who has put malware on your computer.
Yeah, because basically between, and the way that I understand it, and one of the best explanations that I've found was on Ars Technica's website, where they talk about basically how the computer transfers the data between, you know, the parts of the chip that needs to get that information. But that information gets sent to multiple places, or it's a guessing game apparently. So
it guesses what's going to happen next. Out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that data, that data is then available for inspection at least.
Yeah.
And if you know how to then get at that data in that inspection phase, then you need to grab a lot of data to then piece it together. But the fact that it
sounds very difficult to do, but the fact that it can be done means someone is going to do it.
And every processor that's ever been made,
I thought it was only modern processors.
Well, modern processors, but I mean stuff that's currently running most machines, every computer that you've used,
anything that does speculative execution.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, any computer that you're running that you've had for the last 10 years, 15 years even, is definitely going to be vulnerable.
Certainly all Intel desktop mobile chips.
AMD also?
AMD also, although they initially came out and said our chips aren't affected, it seems that they are in some way.
Yeah.
Qualcomm came out and said only 5% of their chips are affected, presumably the high-end ones. Because I don't think the low-end ones.
It's a mobile processor too. I mean, I guess it's the architecture where it was based on. I mean, if you build a processor and you base it off one of the technologies that was that was at Floria, then you'll have that vulnerability. Where mobile processors were built on a different architecture. Yes.
So the reason this was done was to speed up computers, because the chip would guess what's coming next, and it's already executed it when you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite clever, but they didn't think of the security impact of this. Anyway, the fixes are already largely out there. Microsoft, Apple have all issued security updates to fix the problem. I've installed it on all my Windows computers already. I don't know if you've seen an update on macOS for it.
I've been looking. I think I have been updated already before. Okay. I think they updated one of the previous updates was
okay. Patched. They pushed it out pretty quickly, yeah. The negative thing here is that it has an impact on the performance of your chip, of your computer. And
up to 30%.
They say up to 30%. Intel has subsequently said it's no more than 10%. It's still a big number in the grand scheme of things. Your average user probably is not going to notice it. But it has a big impact when you're looking at cloud computing centers, big data centers that have the thousands of these chips running on servers, because those centers are built to be as efficient as possible. And if there's suddenly a 10%, let's say 10% reduction in the performance of those data centers, that is huge. As an ordinary user using your computer, your laptop, it probably doesn't matter that much, even if you notice it, which I haven't, by the way.
Yeah,
I haven't noticed no impact.
Well, I've had some other issues with my computer, but yeah certainly.
You're going to talk about that. So for I think your average desktop user, your average corporate user, desktop user, if you've got a laptop, it doesn't really matter, actually. Just make sure your computer's patched.
No, just be patched.
But
one of the big problems that did come out with this was, before it was patched, obviously all these web servers, if you're running on a shared server, that was one of the big security concerns, because you know, you've got data from multiple web servers running through these cores, and it just takes, you know, one website to be hosted on that's got the malicious code, can infect the computer, get the data over enough period of time.
That is a good point. I see the big hosting companies are already patching. Amazon, I think, has already fixed the problem on their service.
Yeah, it's also patched. They were down for a little while. They said they were just going to patch. And
okay. Yeah, I think Hetzner is quite sensitive about security issues at the moment. So yeah, if your name's Amazon or Microsoft or Hetzner, it's probably a bit of a headache for you. If you run a server. If you maintain your own server, probably a bit of a headache as well. But for your average user, for your average corporate computer user, for your average home user, who cares, actually?
Yeah,
just make sure you're patched.
Exactly.
It's not that big a deal. And it'll be sorted out in future chip releases. The other thing I wanted to mention about this was, if you have a good antivirus or anti-malware package installed, you shouldn't really have to worry anyway, because the only way that this can be exploited is if you have a piece of malware on your computer that exploits it. So if you have a good malware program, anti-malware program on your computer already, and Windows comes with one, then you're probably safe anyway.
Yeah, it should be fine. If you follow the basic guidelines of owning a computer, you probably will be fine.
Yeah. You got antivirus on your Mac?
I do.
AVG,
yeah.
Oh, well. Okay.
Run it. But we should actually be running internet security, which I do have, not antivirus.
Okay.
Because we don't really have viruses as much as what we have internet exploits these days.
Yes. Yeah, I'm using, I was using the basic Windows one, but I've started using Bitdefender, which has got very good reviews. I decided to investigate whether the Windows 10 default antivirus software is any good, and the message is it's good enough. It's good, but it's not the best. Certainly, of all the guys who do this professionally, actually look at this stuff and write reviews on the best antivirus, anti-malware software, Bitdefender was right at the top of the list in a lot of them, so I decided to subscribe to that. Just to be extra safe.
You can never be too safe when it comes to security.
Indeed.
And child protection.
And?
Child birth control. Can never be too careful.
Rahat, where are you taking this conversation?
Is that where we cut the podcast?
No, we'll leave it. But let's move rapidly along to our last story, and you are going to be talking about this one. That's the HTC Vive Pro, and I just saw a couple of headlines on this. I haven't had a chance to dig down into it, but it looks pretty cool from what I've seen.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the reasons why this piqued my interest was because I was playing with the HTC Vive over December, and it was such a phenomenal experience. I mean, everything I've told you about it before still remains true. I mean, it's a I think in my opinion, limited opinion, because I haven't tested all of them, but it is a fantastic way to get into VR if you can afford it. But the HTC, I mean, one of the I guess the drawbacks you can say that the HTC Vive, the current edition, have is the fact that it's cabled. So you have three cables running from the device to the computer, connecting to a little breakout box into your computer. Mm-hmm. What they've now announced, so HTC's announced a new HTC Vive Pro headset, which is obviously upped in specs a little bit. It's got two front-facing cameras, which I'll chat about just now, and it's got the built-in headphones, and it's a very cool blue-looking color. What they've then announced in conjunction with that is this wireless version, although third-party versions of this has been available. HTC's now officially launched their own version, but it's basically a little breakout box that you plug into the headset directly that connects using Intel's WiGig technology back to the computer. So within the space you need to walk around in your virtual world, you can be wireless now, and that box is backwards compatible. But, and so that's only if you bought the original HTC Vive. But the new one, I must say, is looking very impressive. Obviously, it's got increased, better resolution.
What is the resolution?
I'm just looking up the specifications now.
What is the resolution on the current one?
It's 1080. It's the HDA. 1920, I think. Yeah, 1920 by 1080.
Oh, 1080p, okay.
The new one, the increased resolution is 2880 by 1600 per eye. So you obviously have two screens in each one.
So not 4K yet.
615 PPI, 615 PPI. So the original one is 1080 by 1200 per eye.
Okay.
So it's quite a lot more. Yeah. 78% increase, they say.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a massive jump.
And the original HTC Vive is very clear. I mean, you've seen it. It's really good. Hmm. One thing I noticed was, I mean, you do get used to it, but your eyes kind of focus someplace. You do get little blurry spots. Because the inside of the lens has got these concentric circles to obviously the image shines onto these, and these then disperse the light into your eye to give you that depth perception of both eyes. I don't know how it works. So having high resolution, I think, is going to alleviate that problem too, with having these blurry spots. It wasn't an issue. You get used to it very quickly, and you know how to see through them. But I think the overall technology improvement with the wireless, I mean, HTC is really surprisingly stepping up its game in the VR world, coming from the cell phone industry.
Yes.
But if I were to bet money, I would say this is the way to go. They're partnered with Steam Valve Corporation on the Steam platform, which is a big one. So side is...
A lot of games are now in VR, actually.
There's a lot of games, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff that I really enjoyed, and I mean, Google Earth is one of the most spectacular ways you can enjoy...
On a fiber connection, that must be amazing.
Because you've got... Google Maps now has... Okay, so Street View and Maps have got this depth thing, so you can see buildings, and even on your desktop, if you tilt the screen sideways, or tilt the
vertical
projection,
axis,
you can see depth, and you can see trees. So, I mean, I was walking over neighborhoods, and I could see, you kind of know the neighborhood too, but you can see the depth, and you can see the trees, and it feels like you can peek over into the top
details
of the
amazing, yard. Actually.
And the maps, the resolution is much higher now.
And all that 3D imagery is now available for the main cities in South Africa as well, so you can zoom in and see your
own
house.
So I did go to a few cities too, and I was walking around my neighborhood, and it was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, going to places I've been overseas, the Golden Gate Bridge, wow, what a place to, and it feels like it's kind of 3D, it's very close to.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite games, I mean, there's a few of my favorite games, but one of the things that I think you'll enjoy is called Adrift. Now, if you remember Sandra Bullock's movie Gravity many years ago, Adrift is kind of leaning towards that, where you're an astronaut floating around in space, and you have to repair various things. So you're obviously seeing a lot of nice visual imagery. You're floating around, you're seeing really good space images, but then you also have tasks to complete, and in a no gravity area environment. Adrift is a fantastic game. I'd highly recommend to anybody.
Okay.
And then obviously Lab, which is a bunch of mini games, a hell of a lot of fun. Because you immediately transform yourself into a different world. Once you step into the HTC, once you put that Vive headset on, you can be anywhere. The plank demo, I don't know if you've ever done that.
Yes.
It's another little thing. So for those of you that don't know what this is, it's basically it's a basic demo. it's a basic demo that wants you to get into an elevator. So you turn around as it starts, go up in the elevator, and then it opens up you're 30 floors up from in a high-rise building, and you have to walk out on a plank. You've got all the audio, you know, kind of the audio effects around you, so it feels like you're in a city environment. But it is nerve-wracking.
Do you find, by the way, I haven't used a Vive for very long. The two times I've used it, just been in demos for a few minutes, for 5-10 minutes. But I felt terrible motion sickness. Do you get over that, or did you ever feel motion?
I don't get motion sickness. No. I have seen people that do get it, and I believe it gets better if you use it more. I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of motion sickness you're prone to, right? If you get sick on ships all the time, you might have a harder time adapting.
I take medication when I go onto a boat.
Yeah.
So maybe I just need to take.
I don't know prolonged use if it'll make better. It better or not.
Yeah. So maybe I just need to take a Valoid before I put on my HTC.
But I mean, look, I'll get it for you, and you must try it and see. That's the only way you're going to know. But you can also remember, you can also use a Vive sitting down.
Yes.
So you don't have to have a massive space. You can sit in front of a computer and.
Yes. Yes,
do a lot of cool things. They've been.
If I was looking steady, it was fine. But when I was at MTN for the 5G trial, I was trying out this underground mining thing, and I was looking around, and then I was on a little underground train, and it was moving through, and I was feeling very uncomfortable.
Yeah, like again with a plank demo, when you walk on that plank, your legs. It feels like you're there. So even for me, I don't get motion sickness. I couldn't walk out on the plank initially. I knew where I was. I was in my study, in my studio. I could see it.
It's amazing how your brain can't
process it. And as you step off it and you fall, that feeling of falling, your body doesn't know what to do because you're not falling, but it feels like you're falling. And it's
horrible
weird.
Feeling.
It's weird. No, it's kind of fun.
You like it? Okay.
It's the best legal high you can have.
Do you also like roller coasters?
Kind of, but not really.
Okay.
But look, I'm afraid of heights. So for me, the plank demo was pretty freaky.
Okay.
There's also Everest Expedition demo that you can do that takes you from base camp to Hillary Step, and you've got a few mini games that you need to climb up certain things and pick up clothes. But it's beautiful detail. It's like you are there in Mount Everest on Mount Everest.
Yeah, certainly, augmented and virtual reality are going to be. I think they're going to finally start to get commercial traction in a big way this year.
Yes. So the HTC Vive obviously got the two front cameras now, the new one, the Pro, and. The first one, it was put in so you can see parts of the real world. It wasn't really augmented reality. It wasn't built for that because it was one camera and it's just. But the new the HTC Vive Pro has got the two cameras on the front.
Okay.
So I can only imagine that their plans to make this a augmented reality capable too, and then potentially one day bring out augmented reality version of the Vive as opposed to just sticking to VR.
Okay.
Because I think the two technologies are going to work hand in hand. You want to use one time and AR one time and VR another time.
Yeah. When I first saw these technologies coming out, I thought, what's the point? But I'm starting to warm to them.
that was a scary thing. I mean, like a good old Black Mirror episode, I can totally picture a life where if I wanted to step into a different world, you can completely live in it if the technology is good enough by just putting on a headset, maybe have something that stimulates smell and feel. And but if you're looking at the HTC Vive, you can imagine that technology is just going to improve. It's going to happen.
Yeah. There won't be these massive, bulky things on your head in 10 years' time. We know technology always shrinks.
It always shrinks, yeah.
And the power just grows. So.
Give me an implant in my eye. I mean, again, one of the Black Mirror episodes, they put something behind the ear, and there you go. You've got all these capabilities.
Mm. That's very likely
to... I'd sign up for that.
It's probably 30 years away.
I reckon 10.
You reckon 10 years?
I think it's...
Implants?
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah. You can already get implants. There's people with bionic implants. There's a guy that's blind that he uses bionic in his... one eye, I think, to get pulses sent to him, or both eyes, I can't remember. But, I mean, the stuff is there. It's in the labs. It's not just commercially. You know, you can't go to the shop or to the doctor and say, give me one of those. Jack me up, doc.
I'll let you experiment with that first.
I'll report back as soon as I get the implant.
Right. Well, that takes care of the news this week. We were going to talk about CES, but we actually didn't get particularly excited about anything that really came out of CES. Was the Vive announced?
I think the Vive was announced. That was, to me, was the one thing that stood out. But everything else, it's stuff we've seen before. I mean, I think it was LG that introduced that new thin TV, the wallpaper TV, but that's also not new. That was launched last announced, well, that was available last year.
Yeah.
I think.
They also announced that 88-inch 4K, sorry, 8K TV.
Oh, yes. But it's just bigger and better of what we know, right?
Yeah, and we're not going to see it before, you know, 2022, 2023, probably.
But by then we'll have implants, and it doesn't matter what... This is another thing about the Vive, right? You can watch movies on this thing. So if you sit on the couch, you're sitting in a big screen theater, and it feels like it because you've got this massive screen in front of you.
Yeah.
It's a simulation of it like a theater, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress.
Sounds like a train going past outside.
It's actually starting to rain.
Oh, is it rain? Oh, wow.
Aluminium roof.
Got my headphones on here. It sounded a bit like a train going past. Well, when did a train come through Randburg? entirely my fault. I completely neglected to chat to you beforehand about a winner and loser this week. So we're going to jump straight past that section into our.
We let everybody off for the first episode of the
Indeed,
year.
Indeed. So Rechard, what's your pick this week?
All right. So I've recently been. I'm a MacBook Pro user, and I'm sure a few other users out there have had the same problem, but the kernel task has been running abnormally high randomly. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of research because it's really been irritating me. I mean, it'll shoot the CPU usage up to 100%, and then I can't do anything. Like, and it usually happens around certain web pages. I would have multiple YouTube windows open. So it was definitely something browser-related. And I did some research, and there was various reasons, and it doesn't seem to be any definitive answer to fix this, but it is a known issue. But anyway, so I did my research and I found a few applications that helped me to kind of track down where this problem is lying, what is shooting up my processor usage. I'm happy to say that I managed to find it and I killed it. But
what was it?
It was a browser plugin. I don't know which one.
Okay.
And it was. I also had something that was. It was in one of. So the software that I want to talk about allowed me to get access to some of the startup lines to see what's happening when my computer starts up and what's grabbing, you know, the processing power. And there were some lines of software that should have been deleted that I think kept trying to do something,
okay,
and it couldn't do it. And every time it was browser plugin related. Anyway, right. So it was figuring these things out on a Mac isn't as easy as you do on a Windows PC. We don't have access to all those really cool things.
Yeah.
So there's two applications that I ran. I found on the Apple forums, actually, you know, the fantastic forums where Apple themselves never reply to anything. So you have a good community of, you know, dedicated professionals who give advice on how to fix certain things. Anyway, these guys advised two pieces of software. I'll link both of them in the show notes. Titanium Software is the first one, and it's basically like a system utilities app for Mac OS.
Mm.
And it's very basic looking. It's nothing fancy. It's not a Mac app. It doesn't look beautiful. It's just got a balance of checkboxes, but it allows you to access certain things that's usually locked off to users in the operating system. So I can disable certain things permanently on startup, or I can you know, change fundamental parts of the operating system that I want to. Based on what my needs are. I just came across this because I was trying to stop certain things on my computer from running.
Okay.
You know,
you're very patient. I probably would have reformatted my hard drive.
I've already done that last year. I thought that would fix the problem.
Okay.
So when this happened again in December on my newly freshly installed Mac,
it
was definitely, and I tried various browsers, and it seemed to happen across all browsers. So again, the plugin that was on Chrome, I don't think it was that. Just that, because other browsers did the same thing anyway.
Yeah.
And there's another piece of software, and I really can't find it now, because you don't install it, you just run it, and I will link it in the show notes. But it basically runs a report for you that tells you everything that's happening on your computer. In fact, when you do anything with Mac repairs on the Apple forum, they ask you to run this report first. It'll tell you what's running in startup, what's running, you know, during, what's taking up certain things in your processor when your computer is running at full speed, et cetera, et cetera. And it just pumps out a text list for you and tells you what's good and bad.
Hmm.
And it really helped me, because that was between these two things, I managed to fix a problem, although I don't quite know exactly which, I can't pinpoint it, but I did remove a lot of junk that shouldn't have been there, even after a format, because clearly some of the things I've installed afterwards was the culprit, some of the stuff that I used.
Okay.
So if you have that problem, if you have a better solution, I would love to hear it, but I think, you know, this is the place to start, and I did a lot of reading up.
We'll include the link in the show notes on the website. My pick this week is a bit from left field, I guess. It's a torch, a flashlight. It's called the Nightcore MH40GT. Now, I haven't really looked at the torch or flashlight market for many years. You kind of buy a torch, put it in the drawer, and don't think about buying another one.
Yeah.
So I had a Maglite, an old Maglite torch.
Oh, those are great.
From like 20 years ago, if not more. And, you know, I was always kind of happy with it, and it, you know, did its job.
It's a workhorse, yeah.
It was very heavy. If someone tried to attack you, just hit them over.
700 amp batteries, those big fat D-cells.
D-cells, yeah, and you just bash someone over the head if someone's giving you a problem.
Security tool, yeah.
Security tool, yeah. So I started researching the torch market, and I came across actually a friend of mine recommended it. It's the Nightcore MH40GT. And it's an LED torch, and I'm absolutely blown away at the quality of what you can get these days out of LED. This is a 2,500 rand, I think maybe slightly more than that, torch. So it's not cheap. I suppose it is relatively cheap compared to some of the torches you can buy. I think Takealot has a torch on sale for 40,000 rand.
Wow.
So it's a Nightcore MH40GT, and it's got a throw of 903 meters.
Wow.
That's almost a kilometer. Mm-hmm. It's got two beams. Well, you've got multiple beams. You can do different things with this. You've got an emergency mode. You've got an SOS mode.
Nice. But it's a mean-looking thing, too.
It's beautiful, yeah. It comes in a lovely case, a protective case.
It's a belt pouch.
Yeah, you can put it on your belt. Exactly.
Have you done that? Have you put it on your belt and walk around the neighborhood and flash it into...
And what, singing, I'm a lumberjack, man. Yes, I am. Monty Python thing. But it's the brightness of this thing is incredible, and as the high felt thunderstorm comes down, actually pretty good timing to demo it again, because it's a bit darker in here
it's
than it was earlier.
Darker now, yeah.
But it's incredibly bright. On its I forget the exact time, but if you put it on its standard mode, I think it lasts 7 or 8 hours, and if you put it on the high intensity torch, you'll get about 3 or 4 hours. But it's incredible. I had to go into our nearby park the other night because there was a security issue, and I went in with the local security company.
Yeah.
And I switched this thing on, and I shined it, and I was absolutely amazed that I shone all the way to the other end of the park. At night, you can't appreciate this in daytime.
Yeah, torches are best used at night in any case, right?
Yeah, I suppose you're right there.
lit off it's like this. Yeah, I mean, it lights up massive. I was joking, you can use it as a studio light.
I mean, you don't want to look
with
into
the diffusion, you can probably do it.
You seriously do not want to look into the front end of this thing.
That's crazy.
But what's amazing is the tiny size of the LED on this thing. I mean, have a look inside that torch and see how tiny that LED is. And consider that throws light over 900 meters.
LEDs is one of the most fascinating technologies. I mean, do you remember those little round LEDs that we used to solder to our first circuit board when we played around as kids? I mean, that's essentially the technologies evolved into, you know, something that's incredibly low power.
Mm.
And like we see, a massive actual light power throw.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's incredible stuff. So I'm very impressed with this torch, and I also had a chance to use it when I was down in George. I was staying at a friend's place, Martin, who listens to the show, by the way. Hello, Martin. we had a little walk around one evening on the golf estate where he lives, and we were just shining, lighting the stuff up. And really, I was very impressed with the show.
Can we mount
someone, a drone? Someone actually drove up to us and said, is everything okay? Because they assumed we were looking for something or something had gone wrong.
But be careful. Yeah, local authorities walk up to you and say, sir, are you not allowed to hunt in this area? This is a protected environment.
Indeed. go check it out. I'll include a link to the Nightcore website in the show notes as well. And I think that, Gerhard, is our show for this week. Apart from our quiz results, let me do the first question. Showmax CEO John Kotsaftis has joined which international television group, and that's Fox Networks.
Second question. Naspers is said to be leading an investment of 2.5 billion rand in which Indian food delivery company? And the answer there is Swiggy.
And it's a strange name, that. WikiLeaks's Julian Assange has been made a citizen of which country? And that is Ecuador. And, of course, he was, before you asked the next one, that he's been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for, I think, about
10 years.
Five, six, seven years. It's been a long time.
But also, didn't he have some... He made some comment on Twitter that kind of... angered the Ecuadorian president or something.
I do vaguely remember
something. And now they were like, do we still want him around? Nobody else wants to take him. Anyway.
Well, now they've offered him citizenship and apparently wanted to make him a diplomat. But
oh, wow. He's still going to be living in one house. He's not going to get out of there.
Yeah, I can't see. He's got to go from the house to the airport, and that's where they'll nab him.
They'll pick him up by a drone or helicopter and fly him out, and they'll live YouTube stream this. It will be amazing. Anyway, we digress incredibly much. Fourth question. Microsoft has launched PowerShell. It's PowerShell. It's scripting and automation tool on which two operating systems other than Windows? And the answer is Linux and Mac OS X.
So now you can get the C prompt on your Mac, Richard.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out, although I don't really have a need for this type of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, Microsoft's doing interesting things, getting people to use Microsoft software, programming, developing the for the platform, you know.
I'm particularly surprised about it on Linux. I mean, Linux people use...
Won't use Windows for a reason.
They've got their own, what do they call them, Bash shells or Bash, I think it's called Bash. Basic... What's it stand for? I forget. It's a shell.
Scripting something.
Yeah. So this is a competitor to that, but I think there's so many of them on Linux, and everyone has their favorite. And given the history of Microsoft and Linux, are there Linux users really going to be using PowerShell on their OS?
Maybe they will. You give the drug free away first, yes. And then once people start using it, you sell them something on top of it.
Well, that's how the software industry works.
There's definitely a bigger plan here for Microsoft.
And our last question, Intel said last week that all modern processors can be attacked, exposing crucial data. What are the techniques called? And the answer there, Meltdown and Spectre. And that's our show, and also apparently the end of the thunderstorm, which lasted all of about 5 minutes, which I'm actually quite glad for, because I'm not going to get soaked. As always, if you have any feedback, the email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next week, from Richard and myself, cheers.
Ta-ta.